Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all you need. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You got
good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And it's a great night here in Lexington, Kentucky. And we're coming to you with episode number 318, if you're keeping score. And I got a new mic and headset, so hopefully it works and you can hear me good. So I'm here tonight. Tonight it'll just be myself and the one, the only, the one behind the hashtag Dark Style, Daniel Dark. Hey, Daniel.
How's it going tonight, man?
Not too bad, not too bad. Yeah, Holly, which I didn't get a chance to tell you just a moment ago, but yeah, she's embroiled with her daughter's surgery up in Indiana, so she has to wrangle three small ones and take care of her mother and everything else. So she is unfortunately not going to be with us tonight, except in spirit. She may be listening, so definitely want to give her a shout out, and we'll see what's happening.
All right.
So, but
everything comes through okay.
Yeah, I hope so. Let's hope so. So, am I sounding okay? This is a brand new headset I'm using here. So, or am I still is it giving me trouble? So, give me some feedback in our chat room. I see Amy McCorkle. I see Carol Preplattish, and we'll be getting to our guest of tonight in just a second, and we'll see what we can do. So what's been going on with you, Daniel?
Well, I spent a week up in Bristol, Tennessee, in Virginia. And for Bristol and everything, that is a long time to be in Bristol. It is not Vegas, let me put it that way.
Oh, no. That's rough.
But we got to go over to Sevierville and Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg and all that stuff one night and did some spelunking one day and different things like that. So,
well, that sounds good, man. That sounds like you had a lot more fun than I did. I'm going to try here to. I guess, as you're saying, I have a little bit of an echo, folks, so trying to get this here balanced out. So how am I sounding better? Can y'all hear me?
I'm not noticing the echo, but, you know, if they are.
Yeah, evidently they're hearing a little bit of an echo, so I'm going to have to figure something out here. It's a brand new headset, so oh well. Oh man, the joys of this, I tell you, no fun every day. But no, it's been a lot of work. It's been working away on my end, and Imaginarium stuff is going pretty well. We had our deadline hit on the final late deadline on the film festival, so we should have some more additions to official selections coming soon, which is good news. Tomorrow I will be adding, I think it's three new panels and one new workshop to the site. We got a new cosplay page up, and be sure to check that out. It has a lot to do with the costume contest and then also the cosplay groups that we'll be setting up in Creatives Alley. There's going to be, it's going to be great. We're going to have the Orcs back. We're going to have Western Kentucky Ghostbusters, the Brown Coats, you know, if you like Serenity and all that, Firefly, a lot of groups. And there's some other groups which I should be able to announce by next week. It's pretty much confirmed. I just have to make sure I get the official confirmation from them before I announce them. But there's some others joining as well. And then we've gotten a lot of love from the Lexicon Tabletop Gaming Convention and the Sin City Con Tabletop Gaming Convention. They made some great posts. They're working with us on our game side too, and are going to be bringing up some stuff to demo board game wise. So that's pretty cool. So getting some real good boosts on some of the other areas of the convention that are a lot of fun, cosplay, gaming, and then like I said, there will be some more film festival selections. So that should catch you up on all the Imaginarium madness at the moment. So, but I'll go ahead and looks like tonight's guest is actually lurking in the chat room, and I will go ahead and get to our two sponsors tonight. Tonight's sponsors are Sandy Lender, the one and only Genre Blender, and then, of course, the one, the only Ren Garcia with the famous question. So I'll go ahead and do Ren first, and then we'll get to Sandy's spot, and definitely listen to both. Give them your support for supporting the show. Tell them you heard about them here. So here is Ren Garcia.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Take it, Daniel.
Well, I'm normal enough.
All right.
I'm normal enough for you, just barely, but I am.
Yeah, we're normal or weird. Yes, we are always game for some Ren Garcia fun. So, but we'll go. Thank you, Ren, very much for support, and also the show brought to you tonight by Sandy Lender. So here's a little bit from her.
Who puts a vampire in charge of a romantic bed and breakfast? Author Sandy Lender does, but the dashing Caleb O'Dan has more good sense than his author, and he delegates all the party planning. This lets him concentrate on protecting his fairy love interest from nasty trolls. Order Sandy's latest vampire novel, My Fairy Valentine, for a paranormal sweet romance laced with horror and mystery amid a Colorado Mountain love boat cast. Yep, you heard all that. My Fairy Valentine is available now from Sandy Lender. Come on back to the Rose Chateau and fall in love with vampires again.
Thank you, Sandy. I love that book. It is a really good one. Pick it up if you do get a chance. And, thank you, Sandy, for supporting the show. So I am going to go ahead and bring on the guest for tonight. And definitely this is someone that we all know and love. But, yes, we definitely need to give this guest tonight a chance to be a featured guest. Because got a lot going on, and I'm speaking of a great award-winning author in horror and dark fiction. Currently has a new release called New Era, The Black Carmenia, Book 1. Been making a lot of waves and landing 5-star reviews with reviewers, and this guest from tonight just got back from the mighty Stoker Con in Denver. So without further ado, I'd like to bring onto the show the one, the only, Imaginarium favorite, Star Chamber show favorite, and let's face it, one of my personal favorites, Tommy B. Smith. Tommy, your mic is on. Welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone. Thank you very much. Thanks for the warm welcome. Good to be aboard once
You've
again.
You've never been on this show before, have you?
No, first time, of course.
Yeah, first time. Right, Daniel?
Did what?
Said, right, Daniel? First time caller, huh?
first time in, and, you know, he needs to hump up his excitement in here and everything because, you know, don't want him to die on us over there.
Yeah, well, we're going to get the excitement going, that's for sure. I knew that, you know, there always going to be a higher energy because before the show, both of our cats, Albert and Victoria, were just bounding around at lightning speed here trying to get ready, and so they must have known Tommy was going to be on, and And I know Tommy is back from StokerCon. He's actually going to be the first person we've talked to so far live who's been to StokerCon this year. And so I'll get a few thoughts of that. And he can share what he would care to share about some of his adventures there. And then we're going to get into the book that is causing waves. And I guess you could say it must be opening up a new era of dark fiction. So there you go, Tommy.
I see what you did there.
Where would you like to start tonight's adventure?
Well, we can start recent occurrences. I attended StokerCon recently. It was actually, I believe, my first event of the year. Now that COVID-19 is, some of the restrictions are backing down. Though COVID is not completely done, unfortunately, but much of it has run its course. Many people are vaccinated. Many of this StokerCon is still exercising the preventative measures as far as checking for vaccination, proof of vaccination, and what have you. So they were very safe about it, wanting to keep everyone safe and everyone healthy. And so, of course, I have been vaccinated, and everyone, as far as I know, the attendees were as well. So, but we arrived in Colorado on that Thursday, the beginning day of StokerCon, and sort of we were settling in and managed to catch up with a few people. Walked around downtown Denver a bit, and right away ran into Don Guillory. You may know Donald R. Guillory, who's done Imaginarium before, very talented author. I actually managed to snag a copy of his Bastards of the Bayou book also later in the weekend, but then there were others, of course, James Zapata. I met Scott Bradley as well, and many others, many other faces, familiar faces, and of course those I hadn't met previously. But it started out pretty well. It was a very energetic weekend. There were some unfortunate incidents which occurred, which sort of marred our first day there, and that was no fault of StokerCon's, but rather just something that occurred at the hotel that some people are aware of. we did our best to deal with, and there were many. It was good to see a lot of creative friends, and as I said, just creative energy in general. And there were a lot of those from the horror community there, so it StokerCon leans in that direction, and many people know the Bram Stoker Awards are held at StokerCon these days, as they were once held at World Horror Convention and then separately prior to that. But so it was excellent seeing my friend Beth there, who came down and had a book for me to sign. Actually, that was Anybody Want to Play War, which she had gotten, but I hadn't signed yet. And then unfortunately, I didn't manage to have any copies of New Era by the time I had arrived there. But I ran into many others out there despite that. managed to chat with Jeff Strand and Lynn Hansen. And that was a pleasure. Got a copy of Jeff's new novella, which actually won Bram Stoker Award on Saturday night. Bridget Nelson, I met her for the first time. Excellent individual and a talented author. Got a copy of her collection, The Bouquet of Visura. Excellent artwork as well by Lynn Hansen. and early on, I think it was before that particular incident, which I haven't quite mentioned here yet, but S. Alessandro Martinez. It was actually late when I was coming back up to the room, and I actually met him, and later in the weekend got a copy of his book as well, Hellman. So if you're a horror reader, there's a lot of there are a lot of authors up there, very talented individuals you can chat with and get to know, and get to know their works. And I will also mention we got to meet his dog, which was just a beautiful dog. Just this silver creature walking down the hallway of the hotel on our floor. So I had to go to our room and get my wife, Carrie, to come out. And I knew she would want to visit with the dog. And so that was interesting and fun. Tim Wagoner, I managed to grab a copy of his Writing in the Dark finally. And he was there, got to chat with him for a bit. I'd meant to get that for some time. I keep a shelf of writing reference materials. I feel that we can, there's not enough time in the human lifespan for us to glean every inch and ounce of knowledge there is out there as pertaining to our craft or to anything. So it was my pleasure to add that volume to my shelf. And as it turns out, Tim also keeps a shelf of writing reference materials during our discussion, I found out. And I also have a copy of the Writer's Workshop of Horror, both volumes, on that same shelf, and the second of which won a Bram Stoker Award over this very weekend I speak of, and that would be edited by Michael Nost. And Michael is excellent, and got to hang out and chat with him quite a bit over the weekend. Caught an excellent reading by Brian Keene as well. Speaking of Don Guillory, I made it his reading, and that was quite well done. And there were others I meant to drop in on, but circumstances intervened. But we made the best of the weekend, and really it was an excellent convention. We had a really good time with it, and there is a lot of creative energy, as I've mentioned, of Imaginarium. It's a different sort of convention than Imaginarium, but nonetheless, there is that sort of camaraderie among the creatives, and it's a bit more horror-focused, of course, and they have the awards there. So it has its differences, but nonetheless, it was a good time. It was good to get out and do an event again. It's been a while.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that's great. And you're actually, I don't know if you realize this, but that's actually the city of my birth. I was born in Denver. So I only stayed there a very brief period before my dad had to do his postdoc work at Washington University in St. Louis. So I can't say I lived long in Denver, but I was born there. But it's a great.
I think I remember
cool
you mentioning
city.
That once.
It's a cool city.
I think
city
I remember
and,
you mentioning that once.
Yeah. Oh, good memory then. Good memory. Yeah, because I don't often get to mention that. But but you were. I was looking for you on the live stream because Holly and I were watching the live stream of the award ceremony for StokerCon, and yeah, we actually got to yell a lot. Probably startled the cats quite a bit because we were cheering some of the award winners, and
you
named
yes.
a couple of them, because I just absolutely think Jeff Strand is awesome and such a cool guy. I mean, just such a cool personality, and he's gonna be on the show, by the way, in June. So be looking for that one. But also
very
you
nice.
Mentioned the Mr. Michael Nost, of course, who's very
yes.
near and dear to me, and he got recognized twice, which was cool. He had the recognition for being mentor of the year at the Horror Writers Association, and then he had the Bram Stoker, as you mentioned, for Writers Workshop of Horror 2, which is if you've read any of them, Workshop of Horror 1 or 2 or Writers Workshop of Science Fiction Fantasy. I mean, all three of those that Michael's put together are just absolute just gems. As far as the collection of writers and essays and interviews and insights on writing, I mean they are well worth getting. And shout out to our friend Tony Acree of Hydra Publications, who was the press behind Writers Workshop of Horror 2. And but yeah, we were just ecstatic, getting to see Michael go up on stage. I was looking for that bottle of bourbon in his hand. I think he left it at the table. But he was it's great to see. And then also we got really excited because Ellen Datlow won, and she happens to be the Imaginarium yep. guest of honor. I know Holly just adores her. She's been talking with her a lot. We've been planning for Imaginarium, and it was just kind of neat to have three new Bram Stoker winners that are either spotlighted guests or guests of honor at Imaginarium. So that's kind of like, wow, that's kind of like a little cool, little bonus kind of thing to happen, you know. But
definitely.
All the students. And I mean, just a treasure trove of great writers. But yeah, I was looking for you, I figured you'd like walk by the camera and flash the metal horns or something. But I didn't see you on there. But yeah, it looked great.
Well, I was in attendance, but I was not in front of the camera, sitting a little ways. You have to look very carefully. I'm sitting toward the back, actually.
Yeah,
don't know if I would have appeared on that. Probably not, but I was in the room.
No, we looked. We had it up on the 55-inch screen, and yeah, we actually looked for you. So, but yeah, it was a really nice presentation, and for horror writers, it's definitely a must go to if you can make it. Bounces around. It's one of the conventions that bounces around to different cities, and they did announce publicly that next year it's going to be in Pittsburgh. So that I know that was announced, and that makes it great for us, like Holly and I, because that's only like about 6 hours from where we live. So we may actually able to give that one a shot. Yeah, going to Denver in May while we're getting ready for Imaginarium is just a little bit too much to tackle. So we couldn't make it, unfortunately, this year. But yeah, you mentioned meeting Bridget, and that was awesome. Bridget's also a panelist coming to our convention, and the cool thing with her is she was on the Star Chamber Show episode where we had a Transformer blow up. so she's part of Star Chamber Show lore now. She was on that show where we got the big storm that hit 20 minutes in and knocked everything out, but my battery-powered phone connection, that was the only tether to the whole show that we had going at that point.
Yes, Bridget can be intense. If you're going to bring her on the show, you better be ready.
Oh yeah, she got baptized in fire, but she was a real sport, and she was stuck with me as the sole host the entire night. So that felt bad for her. but she did a great job, and looking forward to meeting her in person. And like you mentioned, Lynn Hansen with her covers and just stuff. Yeah, Holly actually just got in a copy of the 125th anniversary edition of Dracula that Dacre Stoker was involved with, and has Lynn Hansen's cover. And she got one signed by him, and that was just so cool. Yeah, and actually in person,
very nice.
I mean, I think on screen it looks fantastic, it looks great, but even in person, that cover, man, it just pops. I loved getting a physical copy of that. So, Dacre's, he's great too. He's awesome. So, like you said too, I mean, it's just a gathering of some really cool, mutually supportive people. James Sabata's a champ. I mean, Donald Guillory's a champ.
Yes.
I mean, they are just great, great supportive people. I mean, always lifting up other writers and helping them. And Brad Keane is just awesome.
He's
another one. We had the honor of having him as a guest of honor in the past too at our convention. So, I do know him a little bit. You mentioned a lot of names. I think there's only maybe one or two you mentioned that I haven't met yet. But they're all just great people with great insights and very supportive. So that's a good one. I'm glad. I wasn't happy to hear about, like I said, what you went through, on the personal side, but I definitely was, like I said, glad that you got to at least get a live event under your belt and do it among, our kind of people, So,
yes, well, a lot of the people.
Did you get a chance to meet Dacre?
I did not see him at the convention. I'm not sure if he was there or not, but I never saw him. If he was, I don't know whether or not he was actually there, but I did not see him.
He was getting ready. I do know that he was getting ready to do some kind of overseas tour related to the Bram Stoker world, and some kind of a tour. I can't remember which tour exactly it was, but it's one of the overseas tours he does. But I do know he's getting ready to leave for that. So it wouldn't surprise me if he didn't make it in person this year. But he's cool. And I can neither confirm nor deny that he may be a future Imaginarium guest, and it's not this year.
Interesting.
So let that percolate for you.
Well,
but he's awesome. We have gotten to talk with him a little bit since the Star Chamber show visit, and yeah, just a really just superb guy. Yeah, great. Has had some great chats, and but yeah, it's a. It's good to get that, you know, ice broken, and good to get out there again, and glad that, people were showing you some love for your books. The ironic thing was is that you didn't have copies of the book that's actually setting the world on fire right now.
I was hoping it would work out that I would, but it didn't work in my favor. Nonetheless, though, that isn't the end of the world or even the end of the month. There are more events coming,
right.
So hopefully I'll have some copies ready by that time.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we'll be ready. I'm working hard to make sure you have the kind of crowd that, you know, hopefully it'll snap up all the copies you bring to Kentucky. So I'm doing my part, man. But the reviews that I've seen coming in for it have been really good. You posted up some good ones recently, and it's clearly being received well. So, can you give us a little feedback? Well, first of all, I guess not everybody knows the plot synopsis and everything about New Era. So, if you want to give folks an overview of that, and then if you could tell us a little bit about some of this early response, because it's looking real good, man, as far as the reception. But yeah, give us a
All
picture
right.
of the book first, then talk about the response.
All right. Well, New Era is the first book in the Black Carmenia series, which begins down in, say, central eastern Louisiana. The Black Carmenia series falls under the umbrella loosely of Southern horror. It's a bit more atmospheric, or at least as it begins with New Era. It's the story, and New Era itself is the story of Terry and Marjorie Valentine. And there are a couple who've moved to New Era, which is an actual location, and I have been there. This was 2019 that we traveled through Louisiana down to Alexandria, and then we headed east after visiting there, staying at the Hotel Bentley, getting some pictures of the Red River and some of the surrounding urban art in the area prevalent along the walls of downtown and other bits of scenery we were able to capture along the way, walking around various cemeteries. Some people know that I travel to a lot of different locations, and I do take photos of various cemeteries around the country. But then we traveled eastward across Louisiana through the heart of it. Throughout many of these areas, like Monterey, then skirting the Black River, which is pretty much envelops the New Era, which is an unincorporated community, which was years and years back, landing for a lot of steamboats and such, and there was some trade that occurred there. And it still exists. New Era still exists in its modern form. The story of New Era takes us back to the early 1980s with Terry and Marjorie moving into New Era. And it's sort of a new era in their lives as well as the place being called New Era. Marjorie even comments on this one at one point to her husband, Terry, New Era, that she likes the sound of it. And it could be a new beginning for them because they've endured so many issues from living in more of an urban area, actually up in Shreveport. They had some very disturbing occurrences. And Marjorie has was not the same after this happened. There was a very serious incident, or at least for this couple, created a lot of difficulties between them as a result. Since then, they developed a lot of insecurities. Both Terry and Marjorie are rather insecure people, and this has played its role in their marriage. They've managed to stay together, though, and to raise their daughter, Natalie, who has since moved off to college. So we're looking at this some years later, but there are a lot of layers to their relationship. So, and a lot of that the reader will glean throughout the course of the story. But as it opens, they've moved to a new era, and they're trying to begin their new life. But it isn't all sunshine and rainbows and peaches, despite the fact they've moved out of the city and got a place of their own and some of their own personal space and hopefully some peace and quiet. But, of course, is there really any such thing as authentic peace and quiet? Because there's always something lurking out there waiting to disturb the calm. It's always someone watching, looking to seize upon what is yours, seize upon what gives you joy, to turn it upside down. Also, we have matters of history, which reverberate throughout time into our present day. And the area they live in, the specific plot of New Era, does have a lot of history. There are a lot of things that have happened, shaped the land and objects around them. Each day we walk through life and we see objects such as, you may see a tombstone, you may see a small wooden marker left as a marking for someone's grave. It may be broken in one spot. You may see a cryptic engraving into the wood. It's barely readable. A lot of small signs of what's come before, things that were once very prevalent in the past that we don't quite understand from our perspective in the present, but we gain a glimpse of that, the relationship between the past and the present in New Era, how it affects Terry and Marjorie, and also a bit of the events, some of the events that have occurred in the past, because the story actually sort of revolves between the early 1980s and the story of Terry and Marjorie. And also, as we're coming out of a pandemic now, the only pandemic that our generation has ever seen or endured, roughly every 100 years, an approximate century or so, there is a pandemic that sets upon the earth. The last one, of course, was right immediately following the First World War, which called the Great War at that time. And that was what was called at the time the Spanish flu. Some really don't appreciate that definition very much, attributing to the Spanish, which is that's just at the time that was what was the belief was, sort of in the way that COVID-19, in the beginning, I remember they were calling it Chinese coronavirus because it had originated in China, but a pandemic is a pandemic. So so it sort of leaps between that time period as they are coming out of their pandemic and the early 1980s. So they're coming out of a world war and a pandemic, and you have a family, Raleigh Castell, and his cousin, Lisette, has come to live with them because she lost one of her parents, her father, in the Great War, and her mother to the flu. So she's come to live with them, and so things don't go so well. Lisette and Raleigh don't particularly mesh that well, and there are some issues, and there are also some strange, unexplained occurrences in the area that they become involved in. And so what became of the Castell family, of Raleigh Castell and Lisette, that is intertwined with the story as well of Terry and Marjorie. And so you have a little bit of bouncing back and forth between these two eras. So you have the old era and the new era. And that, so basically it's a dual story. But at the same time, there are many themes which overlap. And there is an end result, which is the culmination of both. So. And of course you have the black carminia, which is a flower. It's very, very
rare flower. Not many people ever stumble across the black Carmenia, but it does happen to grow. There is one black Carmenia that grows in New Era, and someone finds it. So this is a very, very pivotal part of the story as well.
Very cool. And I mean, that's a very thorough overview. Thank you. And that gives a good feel for it. But obviously it says Black Carmenia Book 1, so it's a series. So give us a picture real quick about how big is the series. Do you already have it set firm, or what's your plan?
Well, as it stands, last year I signed a contract with Raventail Publishing for 3 books for the Black Carmenia series. So as it stands, that's what the deal is. It's 3 books. But it's not unfathomable that there could be further negotiation. That depends. That hinges on a few factors. But the world does have room for other stories, potentially. And we'll determine that when the time comes. But for right now, cool. In the immediate future, we're looking at 3 books. So
nice. And
can you describe what a Carmenia is?
I'm sorry?
Can you describe the flower?
Yes, it is the black Carmenia flower is sort of a withered, almost skeletal flower. Typically does not grow in an area where there's a lot of lush vegetation. You're more bound to find the black Carmenia growing in a barren area of ground, a barren field, perhaps even a desert. It may grow in a forest at times. That is... But you will not find a clump of vegetation and flowers or a flower bed with the black Carmenia in the middle of, daisies and such. I would say if there's an equivalent, zombie equivalent of a flower, it would be a black Carmenia. So.
Nice.
And you should probably never touch the black Carmenia if you ever see one. But not everyone knows that because it is such a rare flower and so many people don't quite know what it is.
Yeah, well, you got a special shout out from the chat room. I just want to make you aware of Michael Nost has slipped into the chat room, and he just said, "Tommy, I hope you're well."
So. Oh yes, Michael, I appreciate that, Michael. I mentioned made a vague mention of an occurrence over the weekend of CircleCon, but Michael was incredibly supportive and helpful, and I appreciate him being there at that. And want to congratulate him on his award as well. So, he was recognized for being the mentor that he is to so many. You know, he's helped so many. He's an excellent editor, and you know, he's really so much more. And I appreciate that, and I know many people do appreciate him for what he is.
Oh, absolutely. And, Michael, we were bragging on you early in the show. I don't know if you caught the early part, but, yeah, we were talking about watching that live stream at StokerCon and how Holly and I were yelling, enjoying a few adult beverages, watching StokerCon, and while we're trying to find Tommy in the crowd on our screen. But there you go. Now, how is the book structured? Is it you primarily tell the narrative between a couple main characters and in like a third person kind of view, or is it first person? What kind of structure did you choose for your narrative on this one?
This one is third person. You've got the story of Marjorie and Terry, and of course you have Natalie, their daughter, who she figures into it a bit, and then you have her when she's younger, of course, and then when they're going through their issues. And then you have the early 1900s time period, and which is third person as well. And they're different sorts of stories, but yes, it's all third person for this
nice,
particular book.
Nice. I swear, Tommy, as soon as I get a little bit, I will get this one read. I just have to survive the next about month and a half, and then I'll definitely get some reading time in July.
I don't doubt it.
Later,
I don't doubt you're staying busy.
So, yeah, I will have this read so I can give my own review of this. But speaking of reviews, you have gotten some excellent ones, and it looks like the response has been great. So give us a little overview of some of those five-star reviews I've seen rolling in, and some of the what are they noticing, and is there anything they're noticing that surprised you, or is it stuff that you kind of expected them to zero in on?
Well, you never really know what you're going to get with the review. The readers will view the story through very different lenses than you or I do, or any other author or creator will. So it's always interesting to step back and see what people say and hear. See, I say, because many times we're reading it on the internet. But at first there were a couple of reviews that were somewhat, maybe a little mixed. There was some certain elements of the story that they weren't as keen on, but the positive seemed to outweigh the negative. And then I started getting some very positive reviews after that. And I had, I believe, a 5-star review sometime before I left for StokerCon. And then it was actually when I got back from StokerCon, and I'm settling in and trying to get some things sorted out after all of that. Then one of the first things I see is that I've been tagged on Twitter, and I see I have a review from Amy's Bookshelf Reviews. And so I start reading this, and it's one of the best reviews I've gotten in a long time. and see, actually, Amy Shannon has actually read a few of my books and reviewed a couple of them prior to that. And this book is her favorite thing I've ever written. So, and she really had just kind of gushing over it in this review, and I was completely flattered that she enjoyed it that much. I mean, so that's and Amy Shannon reads a lot of books as a reviewer, and it's thousands and thousands. And so those words coming from her to me, like I said, were very flattering, and I was just thrilled to see it. And like I said, I had a good time at StokerCon, and then there were the other things that occurred. StokerCon was a nice, somewhat uplifting experience. The other events, not so much. But then the review really, really helped a lot, too. It helps to read something like that. What you're doing, somebody else appreciates. And she said she loved the book. Loved it. So, you know, that's nice to see.
Yeah, it's good to sometimes it is good to get reviews. I've got kind of mixed feelings on reading my own reviews sometimes. I'm kind of like, I was watching some interviews of Clive Barker, or he was some older interviews of Clive Barker, and listening to him comment about how he pretty much ignores anything online because it kind of doesn't want anything to kind of filter into his head, as far as certain people and their strong feelings and this and that. And so there is an argument to be made there, but then at the same time, I'm like you. It is good when you do get some of that positive encouragement, especially when you're an independent author, to get that little boost, from somebody who gets your work and understands it, and that really can mean a lot to an author. So I guess it's a little bit of a minefield, but I take it you do keep up on your reviews, because I have seen you post a few, and I was really, really happy to see the good ones coming in.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's good to see, because it's really, you can't always tell that everyone is going to be passionate about what you are and what you've done and the work you've put in, because, it's just, we're all so different as individuals, as creators and reviewers, I suppose, are quite the same. Yes, it's good to see that people are appreciating what you do. I've gotten a range of reviews over different titles for years that have been all quite different from one another. But this is right. Apparently, I've got readers out there that are appreciating the newest effort. That's good.
So what,
hopefully, that means I'm moving in the right direction.
What's the schedule
I'm
for
sorry,
the trilogy
what is
right now? The pace that it's going to come out.
Well, I'm thinking, let's see, we're getting into summertime. I'm thinking here at some point. I don't have a specific date, but I'm thinking the second book we'll be seeing here in the months to come. But I don't have anything specific again to drop, so hopefully I'll have some more news on that front before too much longer.
Cool. Just make sure you stock up for July. Bring some copies.
Oh yes, yes.
Yes, because I want to get one. Daniel, what kind of questions do you have about the new era of Tommy B. Smith?
Well, when he was reading that, or when he was talking earlier about it, giving the synopsis of it, it was almost like he was reading from the book. And have you decided if you're going to do an audio book of it or not?
I wouldn't be opposed to it. I haven't really thought about it much in the between everything. There's really been a lot happening, but I wouldn't be opposed to it. I would be fine with having an audio book out. I had a I've actually probably should have more books on audio. I only had the one a few years back, and so I would definitely be open to it.
Right.
Have you thought about reading yourself?
What's that?
Have you, Tommy?
Would you think about reading it yourself?
I don't know about that. That's not something I've done before. It's not something that's necessarily impossible. But I've only had one experience in that area so far as getting a reader. And I went with someone else. I chose not to do it myself. Sometimes I suppose it's that part of me that is interested to see what someone else's interpretation, even just an audiobook reading, might be, and in what direction someone might take it. The same as when an illustrator illustrates a short story or something and I haven't really been doing short stories in some time. I used to quite a bit, but when I would see the illustration and their perspective on it, or even the cover art for a new book release, to me, is always interesting to see what the artist's perspective is and what their spin of something I've done and their perspective may be something that's quite different but still interesting in its own way. And so when you're reading, you may not think people may not feel there's a lot of room for that, but still I think just in the same way that an actor can give a certain role, a certain energy of their own, sometimes a reader can do that. And so I've preferred as yet to look for another reader. So I would probably be more apt to do that at this point.
Go ahead, Daniel. It's a daunting task to, you know, to do it and listen to your own voice and think that it's good enough to put out there.
Yeah, I mean, I have to listen to my voice every single day, so maybe I should give somebody else a chance at it.
Well, we should do a spoken word project on vinyl to get the ice broken, and then maybe after that
you'll
be ready.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, I have to listen to myself talk every single day. Maybe I should just shut up, you know?
No. Always good to hear from you. but that's cool. And don't forget, in terms of artistic interpretations, you've even had a crochet artist interpret one of your characters.
Wow. Now that, yes. Well, actually, I have her sitting right here behind me. She's actually staring at me right now. That little Miss Lilac is sitting back there.
Yeah.
Lilac Chambers from Poisonous.
That's awesome.
Yes, no, that's interesting. She sits behind me every day as I write. So I don't know.
Yeah. She probably is listening tonight. She's had a surgery on Tuesday, so she's laid up, and hopefully she's listening in tonight because she's a She's a Tommy B fan, so,
well,
she's out
she's
there
all right.
thinking, dying, get better.
Yeah, I hope she's feeling all right. I did see that, that was happening, so hopefully she's making a quick recovery from that.
Surgery
yes,
went well.
Yes, this
I
is,
can see
this
that.
Is.
Yep, so we're okay. We're on the other side of it, but, yeah, she was in a little pain
right.
and stuff, so she's not been able to rest, sleep much, so she might well be listening right now, so hopefully we're at least amusing her.
Well, hopefully so.
But yeah, not many authors have had characters in crochet yet, so figured I should mention that.
Oh, yes, it's definitely interesting. And then,
that's too funny. So can you give us some hints on some stuff in percolating out there? Anything you're doing with the artists or other or writing and what's coming in the near future as far as works in progress?
Well, I wouldn't mind getting back into writing some short stories again. I mean, I meet so many horror authors that, have short stories forthcoming in anthologies and magazines and the like. Once upon a time, I did. Now, I've sort of backed away from that. It's so much easier. You have so much more heft in promoting, a book-length release or even a novella, something along those lines than a short story. But I suppose a short story, there are so many people who read the anthologies. You know, you have the themed anthologies and all of that just general horror fans read and may discover a variety of new voices and authors. And I do have a lot of short story material that really is unpublished that I haven't done much with in a while. I've sort of backed away from some of those markets, but it is still there, and I still enjoy reading short stories and writing them as well. So I can always revisit that at whatever point I want. But of course, I have to finish the Black Carminia series. I'm currently actually trying to write the third. Got quite a ways through that one, and a lot of things have happened, of course, so sort of derailed me somewhat, but I'll get back to that shortly. And when I finish that out, then we'll see what's next. But I always have so many ideas and so many, creative visions on the horizon that I'm never going to have any shortage of material to write about.
Right.
I have multiple projects in the works. What is it?
Just choosing which ones to do. That's the question.
Yes. Choosing which one? Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Choosing which one comes first.
Problem,
which one do I want to devote?
I understand.
Yes. And I think I have that somewhat worked out. In. What is it?
But you always pick a good one, though. I mean, you always throw a... something that's new and engaging whenever you pick a project. So, and you definitely, I'm not worried about whatever you select. So, but yeah, it sounds like the series is going to be a central focus for you right now, and that's awesome. So, can't wait to see how it grows here.
Well, I'm looking forward to sharing it with you and with everyone. Sometimes it hinges on whether or not it's going to be the right time for that particular project. Without anybody wanting to play war, it was sort of a departure from horror, and it was a story that I wanted to write. But it was a departure from horror, but it was more of a character-driven story, and so now I'm sort of leaping back into horror and going back into the Black Carminia series. And then after that, I have a pretty good idea of where things are going to go, but people are just going to have to wait and find out for now, because that's still a ways away.
Now,
I want to
go ahead and make sure you get some chance to give credit to some of the folks that also worked with you on the book, because I love the cover. I think the cover is great for a new era, and I wanted to know who did the cover design and then also who worked with you as an editor on this one, so we can show some love to the publisher there.
Yeah, well, this is Raventail Publishing. So they have a graphic design team, but I've actually not there's a team, but I've actually not been given their names as yet, so I don't know, but I did give their graphic design team full credit for the work they've done, which is nice. I posted on Twitter about that.
Superb job,
They've been doing a good job with all of that, and then their editorial staff. They have teams that handle the graphic design team. They have an editorial team. So, it's
cool.
Seems
like they did a very good job. We'll have to nudge them to come out and see it in Kentucky too, because they obviously did a good job with your release, so liking how it's coming across and received and how it looks and good job, man.
Yeah, I suppose every publisher I've dealt with to date has had a slightly different process and way of doing things, but all have had their merits But hopefully we can get them out to some of these events.
I figured I'd ask. We do love to highlight as many folks as we can, but especially with them, because we haven't gotten any of their group as far as the publisher on the show yet. So you might tell them to get touch base with me. We'd be glad to have them on the show sometime.
I was just going to say there are a lot of my fellow authors with Raventail who have also signed deals with them, whom you may recognize. I know a couple. I don't know if you know Gabrielle Faust,
yep.
but Jay Wilburn, I know you know as well.
Jay.
Those are some.
Yeah.
There are actually a whole list of names. Some I know and some I don't, but...
That's cool. That's awesome, man.
I got Jay Wilburn's Sacrifice to Time, on digital. So I haven't read it quite yet. I think that's the next step, though. Yes, Sacrifice to Time by Jay Wilburn. But Raventail published that. So.
Yeah, he's talented.
So they're a new up-and-coming publisher.
Enjoyed having him out to... He was out to Imaginarium the first couple of years, so I did get a chance to meet him, and he's a character. But
yes, absolutely.
But yeah, sounds like you've got your deck stacked for the year, though. And in addition to obviously we talked about coming out to Kentucky, but what other stuff you have going on live through the year? Because I know you're eager to get out there now.
Yes. Well, let me see. Let me actually look up what I've got scheduled here.
Nice, the big list.
It's actually, I remember when I did that book tour for the Mourner's Cradle. That was probably the biggest one I had ever done. Now, let's see. This one is not like that one, but it's still something. I've got 6 shows this year that I'm doing, and that's counting StokerCon, which I just did, and then I will be at CineCon in Norman, Oklahoma, and that's a convention I've been doing for years and years and years and years now, but it's a sort of, Mid-SouthCon, sort of a multi-genre convention in Memphis. Well, CineCon is basically the Mid-SouthCon equivalent for Oklahoma City. But it's a nice event. There are a lot of good people, a lot of excellent fans. I always enjoy it and do well there. So, and, of course, there's one called Imaginarium in Louisville, Kentucky, if you've ever heard of that. I'll be up there in July.
Yeah, you have to tell me about that one. I haven't quite heard of that one yet.
then the end of July, I'll be at New World Comic Con, which is in Oklahoma City. And that's just a one-day event. It's sort of an expo-style event where you have a lot of comics and such. But they're also good people, and they take care of all their vendors. And so basically, it's more of in a vendor capacity. But still, there are a lot of people out there who enjoy comic book readers are readers, And some years ago, I didn't really consider that as much until someone told it to me in exactly that way. And I tried a couple of Comic-Cons, and I didn't actually quite well. So this is one that's more supportive of what I do. And so I try to go out and support them and do their event and seem to do fairly well when I do theirs. I'll be coming back to New World Comic-Con. In August, there's KillerCon in Texas, which is actually in Round Rock, but it's KillerCon Austin. It's just right outside of Austin. So, and that'll be one that a lot of other horror authors and horror professionals attend. A little bit like StokerCon, but smaller. There's sort of a Splatterpunk. They actually do the Splatterpunk Awards there.
Nice.
But I don't really consider myself to be a Splatterpunk author, but I have written, like with Poisonous, very violent, more extreme horror. And so it's, but there are a variety of horror authors who attend that one. And it's been a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I went to the virtual event, and prior to that, it was a couple of years back. Before that, I think I did the actual event down in Round Rock, Texas. But then my final one will be at SpaCon in Hot Springs, which is not too far from me. But that'll be in September, and that's more of the multi-genre type convention. It's fairly new. It's been going on a few years, I think. But that's my itinerary for the year.
That's not bad at all, man. That sounds pretty busy, and I'm glad you got some that are a little bit shorter of a drive. Yeah, where you are, you actually have the ability to get down to some of those Texas cons, because those are good. And I think, Daniel, did you mention KillerCon before? Is that one of the ones you've talked about?
No, the one I've talked about, StokerCon and Pope at, you know, one up in Baltimore with Edgar Allan Poe.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah, because I was trying to fit, because I could have sworn you mentioned a KillerCon as well, but that's cool.
You're probably thinking about Killer Nashville, which is a murder.
Yes. I know that
place.
That's why I'm getting messed up here. So many events. But the Texas ones are good. And, they got some real gems down there. So, yeah, you're not far at all from there. So, I mean, that's a good place to definitely hit if you can, Tommy. Yeah, there's some good ones throughout Texas.
Oh, yeah, Texas is big. There's room for a lot of that.
Yeah. And, in Oklahoma, you can hit that all day long from where you are. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a bit of a jaunt for you to go to the other ones. But
sometimes
glad you do. So,
for years I did, some of the Oklahoma shows were some of the first ones to welcome me as an author and as a creator. So I always go back, and it was Oklahoma City, actually. So I still tend to drift up there and do a lot of the shows up there. But I've drifted outward, and I've found some excellent shows as well in Kentucky, as you know, and then elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, getting back at it, man. It's about time. Yeah. After these quiet pandemic years of where we haven't all been able to get out and about. So, I did 3 events back in last month, and they each were distinctly different, but I mean, it was one a book fair, one a writer's conference, and the other one a signing, very, very nice bar and lounge. So all three were very different, but all enjoyable for
heard.
Reasons, and it was good to get back at it again.
Oh, I
so
bet.
So that was But unfortunately, I had to hit the brakes until mid-July, and then I can get out and about. But right now, it's we're bunkered down in prep mode. So definitely not able to do a lot until about mid-July. But I'll definitely get out there. I need to get down to where you are. I just love that area of the country. So, and like I was saying, the Texas ones, such a good climate for a lot of conventions down there. So that's a good one for sure, especially if you're a speculative fiction writer. So,
oh, definitely. They have a number of different ones. There is they have FinCon, which is multi-genre, but they have other. It really depends. I mean, of course, you know, I know that you've done fantasy as well as the Hellscapes novels and, well, the collections and then the, you know.
Oh, you just slipped, Tom.
So.
You just slipped.
You
said,
well,
you
know, books, novels,
which
interchangeable sometimes.
Yeah. No, they're collections right now, but
yeah.
You wouldn't happen to know anybody that suggested to me to attempt a Hellscape novel.
Well,
since you hinted there, I can tell you about 31,000 words into it, the macro story is taking form very nicely and getting a whole lot of ideas on the deeper level kind of stuff to weave into it. And so it's definitely going to be a two-path sort of thing because I want to get the pro story down, and then I want to go back and put in some real cool little detail work. So it's going to be a kind of interesting, you know, process of writing it. But about 31K in, and it won't be a big, huge one. So I'm basically, I would suggest about the halfway point, just maybe close to the halfway point. Somewhere around 60 to 65K in size will be the finish, but that's your fault because you suggested that I, after doing the all these short stories in the Hellscapes world, to actually do a full length, and I did have an idea percolating for a while that I thought would fit that, and so far it's turning out to be a good experience. And it also gives me a chance to play a lot of really aggressive metal as far as my listening during the writing session. So, yeah, there's been got the Slayer albums back out and stuff like that.
Oh, yes.
So,
you'd be
very proud of
me. You know.
Yeah,
well,
look
at some of the short stories, and some of the short stories in the Hellscapes universe are a bit longer, sometimes drift on toward maybe not novella, but maybe novelette length. In some cases, and I could easily see them drifting on into novella length or beyond, even perhaps novel length. And so I would be interested to see what would come of that. So,
well, you're going to get your wish. it's coming. It's about midway there, and
because you can
really
flesh out some interesting and hellish.
I call it a monster menagerie, and some of the creature stuff in here. I can't wait. I am going to challenge an artist. I'm going to find somebody I can work with to do some illustrations because some of the creatures in this are just weird and bizarre. I kind of put them down as they come to me, you know, and no matter how weird they are. I got to find somebody that can be willing to do something that's that macabre and dark and weird, but there's a lot of cool creatures out there. Yeah, there's a lot of cool creatures and stuff. So it's definitely a hellscape, and the narrative, like I said, kind of starts from one point and just kind of sifts deeper and deeper into the full engagement of the hellscape. So it's kind of neat how the novel plays out right now, but and it follows a single character narrative. So you're kind of seeing it through the eyes of, you know, one guy. And it's wild. It has a lot to say too. Yeah, it definitely has a lot of metaphor in it, but it's pretty intense. But get ready, because I have to blame you because you actually suggested. So I put this on the record too: is that you actually kind of suggested to do a third volume of Hellscape short stories, and I had a lot of ideas in the box for that. So you've had a pretty good influence on the actual creation of Hellscape stuff. So,
well,
that's,
I feel like because
you give me the encouragement to like I said, do a third volume and then also to attempt a novel length one, and so hopefully you'll enjoy what comes out of this.
Yeah, well, I don't doubt it'll be interesting. I mean, it'll give you an opportunity to flesh out this world all the more. I mean, you have three volumes that you're plunging a bit deeper and deeper and deeper to flesh out and to lend so many more layers to this world, layers and perhaps levels. And then you have this one whopping novel to come down and perhaps finish it off, if that's your choice, or, you know, explore some more, however it happens. But, you know,
there's infinite realms to explore here. It's a fabulous
thing. You know, I think there's always room to explore.
Yeah, there's many facets to this, but yeah, this is just happens to be just one. So it's fun because, like I said, you know, those stories gives me a chance to totally immerse and cut loose into some real visceral macabre horror, and that's fun. And I don't always get a chance to do that in other types of genre work. So this is kind of fun to go no holds barred. But you know how that is. And like to do different things. So yeah, it's fun. It's fun. Brings out the inner Clive Barker in me, as I say.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all right. Yeah.
Yeah, he's long been one of my biggest influences. I mean, I deem him my third biggest influence from my root influences, which were Tolkien and Lewis, fantasy writers, of course. Yeah. But Clive Barker was the next major influence for me, and you know, still this day. So, yeah, he's definitely at the top of the echelon of my influence list. So, yeah, that side of me needs to get out and breathe once in a while. So,
oh yes,
I guess we're
I've enjoyed
Brown.
Clive Barker. For...
Yeah, I'm gonna.
Yeah, I've enjoyed.
Read Aberrant here pretty shortly. I'm gonna go ahead and read that through again. But yeah, he's just, yeah, you never can go wrong with him. So
you know, the funny thing is I've mentioned Tolkien, or people asking in general who are one of your influences. I've mentioned him as well, and some people don't know that I actually started out writing more fantasy and then I progressed toward horror. You know, so, and whereas
very
with
cool.
You, I suppose it was kind of the other way around, that you, not necessarily progressed toward, but you've sort of just branched into horror as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sort of like myself, I started out writing fantasy and poetry when I was younger and everything. And now, you know, I'm not real close to either one of those when I write now, so.
Yeah, yeah. See, if I tell someone, you know, that Tolkien was one of my old influences, they read something of mine, it really doesn't make a lot of sense without me telling them a whole bunch of other things and explaining how it got to the point that it is now. But but a long time ago, yes.
That's cool.
Now it seems easier to me
cool.
to just explain influences as it relates to the specific work, then it makes more sense than to say Tolkien and let him read something like you know, Poisonous or something that's just completely slasher horror. But.
Right. Well, that gives me something. I'm going to start badgering you to do a dark fantasy series. That's going to be
scheme
so you can show off your Tolkien influence. Now I know what to, now I know what to encourage you to do so I can pay you back for your encouragement.
Well, yeah,
no,
one never knows. I mean, it's.
I know your plate is full right now, but now I know what I need to nudge you on. Then that's cool.
Hmm.
Always learning something new about you, TBS. This is awesome. So
I did years ago have some short stories published in the realm of fantasy, not in realms of fantasy, but in the fantasy genre. So, you know.
Nice.
Who knows, I could come back to that someday.
Yeah, and the weird thing is because when I was a kid, my parents were both Stephen King fans, like the early Stephen King. And so, you know, but I was never really exposed to Stephen King as much as Clive Barker is the one that I, you know, was introduced to and connected with when I went to college. And it is just like love at first read, you know. Just devoured every possible thing out there once I read Books of Blood and all the others. So it's funny how, I had the chance to be introduced to horror maybe a little earlier because both my parents being King fans, but I never did pick them up and they didn't really, you know, kind of
kind of, you know, nudge me to read Stephen King. I mean, they kind of left me in the, you know, well, I was only 9-10 years old, so they probably didn't want to encourage me to read King just yet. But, you know, they wanted me to enjoy the Narnia worlds in Middle Earth. But I was, you know, yeah, there's a chance I could have been introduced to King before Barker, but the funny way it worked out was, yeah, Barker was the one I really kind of embraced. So it's, and then beyond that, of course, I've read, you know, plenty of Stephen King and all kinds of other writers, but that was the weird kind of path I took. And of course, the Hellraiser movies didn't hurt either, because those blew me away too. And I've had a passion for the film world. So
I mean, at that time, it almost seemed to me, Hellraiser, the original Hellraiser film, I went and saw in the movie theater when it came out. It seemed like to me at that time that Clive Barker was almost, and I don't know as far as how much, you know, each of them were grossing as an author, but I know that to me it seemed like Clive Barker was almost bigger than Stephen King during that time period. So, of course, obviously, Stephen King has done tons of things at the moment. So, but
yeah, I got a book in my room from the 90s that is about the fiction of Clive Barker and Stephen King. They're co-built. And the book is about the horror of Clive Barker and Stephen King, you know, with them being, you know, presented as, you know, equals. So in the book, you know, on the same level. Absolutely back then. I mean, Clive Barker was red hot and definitely viewed as...
I mean, they're
very
different sorts of authors, but yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, way different. Yeah, definitely different. I like the visual, cinematic, kind of macabre, visceral. I love that word.
Clive Barker.
That aspect of Clive Barker, and then he had a spiritual depth to his stuff, and if you look for it, it's there. And that's what I love about Barker, is he has this deeper level, and if you once you get kind of tuned to his work, you can see it. Every time, and he's got a real depth to his work. I mean, philosophically, spiritually, and it's underneath, you know, like I said, the surface in a lot of his stories. I mean, Imagica is an intensely philosophical novel, huge novel. I mean, it's an 800 pager hardback.
You've got to have a little time to get through that one, but yeah,
more dark fantasy. But it's my God, it's a very much about life, existence, the afterlife, consciousness. I mean, you want to go deep. I mean, yeah, Barker's got depth, and that's what I always loved about him. I love the writers that can operate on different levels. They can entertain, or they can, you know, really give you a thought-provoking stuff, or they can get you to, you know, look at something a little different. And it's Barker hits it all for me. I mean, and it's I'm glad he does art and film and everything he does, but, you know, there's a part of me that wishes he produced more literary work, because I just love his stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What are you reading right now that is not horror?
Are you asking Tommy?
Either one, both of you.
What are we reading that is not horror?
Yes.
Well, let me see. I'm going to have to look. Because right now what I'm reading is horror. I certainly read outside my genre. I read quite a few different things. Let's see. I'll have to go through my digital library as well as my physical books to see what I've read recently. Right now I'm actually reading Picking the Bones by Brian Hodge, but that is horror, so that doesn't count. So let me see, what else? Of course, I read Homecoming to Murder by Carol Priestley a while back. So that is mystery. I read mysteries as well. Let's see. I will read satire, mysteries. Let's see. Historical fiction I will read as well. Um, I actually read some time back, and it wasn't her, but it was Armand Rosemilia. He wrote a book, A Month of Duncan, so which was basically, it was nonfiction. He was just basically going around to Dunkin' Donuts shops, and he would go in there and just talk to people, you know. And he would go in there and he would write about what he ordered. He would order, and he would order something different at every Dunkin' Donuts he went to, and and then he would attempt to talk to people. Have you read that?
No, sounds great.
Yeah.
So
it's just, you know, a lot of awkward encounters and just him trying to speak to people and ask them what they're about. And he would order a different, you know, donut or whatever else they have there, and then different beverage. And just him just hopping around all these. So that's just different, you know. And I actually kind of like it when an author does something like that, makes a little departure from their standard formula or genre, to just do something like that. Or, you know, like speaking of Jeff Strand, he wrote one time wrote a book called Kumquat, which is basically like a sort of a, almost like a romance, maybe a romantic comedy a little bit. But it was just so, it was just, he just basically went off and did whatever he wanted to at the time, you know. And I kind of relate to that, you know, that you don't necessarily want to be pigeonholed and stuck into a certain niche where you have to write the same thing all the time, you know. We all like to branch out and develop and our craft and write about other things as well. There are certain things we might be recognized for. But so I enjoy those little, sort of in the way relating it to music, you know. And you have a band like Steven, and I know you know this, like Testament, for example. They were a thrash band, you know, they were in the Bay Area LA thrash bands, but whenever they do a ballad, it's very well done. It's always excellent. I mean, you know, they did The Ballad and some others. What else? Trail of Tears, that was an excellent one off the Low album. But I always enjoy it when someone steps a little bit off the path, off the beaten path, and does something just creative, you know, and interesting. That's maybe it's not what they're known for, but, you know, it's nonetheless it ends up being something beautiful or entertaining. And so.
No, definitely. Definitely.
Well, we're talking about the book that you read where the guy did interviews and stuff, basically. Thought about getting back into your interviews that you're doing at different cons, or are you still doing it?
You mean interviews like I did, you mean what, the documentary that I did a few years ago,
yeah,
or me and Will Harrison and I? Yeah, well, it's possible. You know, it's possible, but it would be something very different if we did that again. Probably would not have the same focus. It would have to have a different direction, different focus, different theme and subject. So I've thought a little bit about that, but as yet, I'm still trying to work on the written works and such, and get some of my fiction out. Working on Black Carmenia Steel, but in time, perhaps that's a consideration I'll make.
Nice. Well, to answer your question, Daniel, lately, I'm always reading a lot of research stuff, so a lot of futurism and things like that, Nephilim research, a lot of weird stuff, both future and past. But as far as the books I'm reading now, I'm reading the latest installment in Steve Alton's Meg series, and I guess that sort of qualifies as horror a little bit because of the sharks and whatnot, but it actually plays like a bit of science fiction and mystery and a lot of things like that too. So I call it a cross genre kind of thing. But then The Soul After Death by Father Seraphim Rose, which is a take on the afterlife and the soul by an Orthodox priest, like, you know, Russian or Greek Orthodox perspective, which I really didn't ever delve into. You know, I've read a lot of different perspectives on the afterlife and souls by various faiths and this and that, but never had really dived deep into the Orthodox view. And so I thought that was something I need to shore up on. And it's a really, really thought provoking book. I mean, it's got some depth, and so it'll make you think. But that's The Soul After Death by Father Seraphim Rose. And then the other one is, of course, is Paulo Coelho, and I'm just finished up The Pilgrimage. And Paulo Coelho, you know, a little bit of magical realism, always has a little bit of kind of a spiritual element underneath, a philosophical element, and it's just food for the spirit. I mean, his writing, it's just, every time you read one of his books, you just feel so uplifted and so good after finishing it, because it's a really empowering kind of fiction. And, just in the human experience and the journey of life and not to get into his, meaning of life, but, as far as nothing Monty Python-esque, but the meaning of life and things like that. Paulo Coelho is just a great writer. And so, I just finished up with one of his. And so, I'm reading a bit of a smorgasbord right now of topics. So it's a little mix of everything. So, but that's good. I feel I learn more by sometimes going way outside my genre, as far as writers go, and always see some stuff that helps me grow. So that's a good thing. So that's, hopefully that answers your question there, Daniel.
Oh yeah. I always like to hear what other people are reading to see what's going to be brought out into new works for them, because, you always, when you advance your reading, you advance your writing. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's useful to be open-minded, to read outside your own genre. I mean, you never know what alternatives, viewpoints and perspectives and tools that may offer you reading outside your own genre, branching out. Try to be open-minded in my reading habits. The only thing I don't read is just romance. And as I've said before, I don't mind a story having romantic elements, but when it's simply romance and nothing else, I tend to just sort of get bored. But that's just a matter of personal taste. I mean, everyone has their own reading habits and own preferences and such.
Right. And, Tommy, we are coming up on about 2.5 minutes on the show, so I wanted to give you a chance to give all the details on how to find Tommy B. Smith online. So as many as you would like to share for folks to find you or your books.
All right. Well, you can find me at TommyBSmith.net, and you can find me on Facebook at author Tommy B. Smith and on Twitter at Pen of Chaos. You can find my books on Amazon. Of course, Bookshop, which supports our lovely indie bookstores. You can find my books. We have a local bookstore, Bookish, which carries my books. But anytime you order off of bookshop.org, you're supporting one of your independent bookstores, which I appreciate. And yes, some of them are available on barnesandnoble.com and a variety of places, really, online. It's not usually too hard to find. So that's me.
Fantastic, man. It's always great to have the Pen Sandbox. And, of course, tonight we got to explore a new era of Tommy B. Smith fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Which was good. That was my goal tonight, was to highlight this new book. It's making waves and hopefully blossoms into a best-selling series for you. And just always great to have you, man. You're awesome, and looking forward to seeing you in July.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you, too. Look forward to hitting Imaginarium, and there are going to be a lot of other awesome people there. So I implore everyone to go. It's always a good time.
You bet. You bet. So, we'll let you have the last word, Tommy, and then Daniel, you can take us out. But, as far as me, great evening with everybody. And, definitely check us out next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern for another visit with a talented and wonderful creative on the Star Chamber Show Live podcast. So over to you, Tommy, for the last word. And then go ahead, Daniel, and give the final word.
Well, it's been an excellent time, as always. Thanks for having me. I'm just getting started. There'll be more to come.
Yeah.
There always is.
Nice.
Until the next.
All right, Daniel.
As always, we have, tried to bring you very imaginative creatives. And I believe Tommy B. Smith is one of the most imaginative creatives that we actually get on here. He is one of them that is so prolific that we've had to have him on here multiple times to talk about new works and stuff. And he always brings a new light to this show. Will you retain some of those lights tonight on how to be better at your craft? We have different authors that we know that are coming to Imaginarium that, as we talked about early in the show, that are Bram Stoker winners and other, award winners that will be there. And hopefully you'll get a chance to meet them, walk up to them, talk to them. They are normal people, and they're at Imaginarium to help you until we get a chance to talk again next week. I implore you to be creative. This is Daniel Dart signing off.